G'day, my name is Mike Coleman and welcome to On The Mic. Today we have a very interesting man by the name of Brent Williams. He's an expert on team building, motivating people, focusing on success. He's a Gen Y expert and he makes his own movies, a filmmaker. Welcome to On The Mic, Brent Williams.
Thank you for having me.
Good to see you, dude.
You too.
How's the movie making going?
It's going, you know, like anything. I think success is about staying in the race, mm-hmm. and it's been a lifelong journey. And I think the last 2 years is really finally all the short films and music videos and bits and pieces. You do corporate videos have come to fruition, and now I'm making the leap into feature films.
That's which so is, cool.
Yeah, super.
Are you allowed to talk about this this one with Armie Hammer, or are we going to keep that on the quiet?
All I can say is it's a very exciting feature film that we're looking to premiere at Cannes Film Festival this year. There's a lot of hype around it. It's about the true story of the 2008 terror attacks in India, where some terrorists basically seized the Taj Hotel, and the stories are really a story of survival and heroism, where the staff at the hotel rescue hundreds of guests from these terrorists. And I think what's great about the film, it's not these are terrorists and villains and these are the goodies. It's a very balanced approach that really focuses on the story about why these young people went and did this. You know, it wasn't necessarily about killing people or any religious protests. It was just about them helping their family, and they were kind of brainwashed by the leaders of this kind of terrorism group.
Was it Al-Qaeda?
No, it wasn't. It was just...
So they wanted to get monies for their families.
And
this terrorist group told them.
Yeah, and these kids going in there doing this, there's a scene where they flush the toilet and they said, what's this? They don't even know what a toilet is. You know, and this is like... And I think what's great about the story is it just... it gives a more balanced approach, which I think is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, cool, man. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Sounds really exciting. We'll get you back on the show so you can come in and have a chat about it once the movie comes out.
For sure.
But the reason why we got you in here today is to meet you and talk about your incredible life where you're traveling around and you're helping motivate people and help us understand Gen Y and how they're working in today's society. Why are Gen Y so difficult?
I think, well, that's a big question.
Because we don't really understand them, because like I'm a Generation X, which is, you might need to look that up, but 70s. I've had a lot of work done. I know I look great. As opposed to someone who's Generation X says, hey, show up at 9 o'clock in the morning, you got to work. And Generation Y goes, I don't really work well at 9. Yeah. You know, I got to get up and have my Frappuccino latte with a twist of lemon. And then I got to message my friends and check my socials. And then I could probably get there by 10:30. And they're like, Generation X bosses are like, what the fuck? This kid can't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
So how are people dealing with that kind of...
Well, you know, very difficultly. I think there's a lot of people that will go in to companies and do events on cultural change and talk about what drives a Gen Y person versus a baby boomer in terms of what they want. You know, long gone are the days, and I speak about this with a lot of my teenage groups, long gone are the days where you go, right, I've got to save up money, get a deposit, get into my home and pay off that home, and this is the Australian dream. Now it's just about, look, you know, it's unrealistic to get in a home now. I'm just going to blow my money on trips and travel and... Yeah. With technology, everything's about instant gratification.
Enjoying your life, getting out there. And that's why a lot of Gen Ys are creating businesses online where they can just travel the world and starting these online businesses where Amazon's just going to ship the stuff from their shelves and they just run it from their phone.
Yeah, completely leveraged. I mean, technology has changed the game. And in fact, I was speaking to my old high school principal a few months ago.
You still speak to yours?
Well, he...
Mine's still tracking me down and trying to kill me.
He brought me in. He wants me to, and this is a really fun thing, he wants me to run a seminar for all the teachers on entrepreneurship because he said that futurists are saying that the next 20 to 30 years, 30% of the workforce are going to be business owners. And so teachers who are employees can't really teach a student entrepreneurship if they're not an entrepreneur themselves. So it's all about, leveraging your time. And that's great. Technology means that we can be on holidays and traveling. I know some social media influencers that are making, you know, $5,000, $10,000 a month.
Like, on a lot of the reality TV shows I've worked on, these people go from having no followers on Instagram. They get on a TV show and their following goes to like 300,000, 400,000. And they've just created a job for themselves. They're creating content and traveling the world. And like they'll do a story on a resort 1 minute and then a story on some skin cream the next. And they can easily turn that into a few hundred thousand bucks a year. Yep. So the schools need to change because I feel like that the school system, I've been reading a few things about this online of late. The school system is very archaic in the way it's training kids to shut up in class and, you know, just to try and keep up with what the teacher's saying. And there's some kids who will be bored in class because they already know what the teacher's talking about, and some kids are left behind because they don't know what the teacher's talking about. And so they need to change the whole schooling system to work better with today's society, like ringing a bell. It's like people are being trained to work in a factory and being told what to do. How do we change that system? Because I don't feel like it is changing.
Look, it's very hard. I mean, I remember it was in 2003, very early on my career, I was attempting to create a new form of education around career guidance for high schools. Yeah. And I was actually meeting with the federal government on a regular basis to roll this out nationally. And it all fell over because the Minister of Education at the time was Brendan Nielsen, and he was going to sign off on this thing. And then he moved to defence and the whole thing fell over. The red tape that always happens. And I think the challenge with the education system is it's such a big thing to change. Who takes responsibility? Because if you stuff it up, you know, you're the one who's got the noose around your neck. So it certainly needs to change because technology is moving in a way that we are consuming information very differently. Mm. Our attention span is shrinking. I mean, you know, I don't know many people that would watch a video for more than 5 seconds if it didn't grab them straight away. Mm. And so is the education system matching the way in which young people are consuming information? No. And
you've got the attention span of an ant now.
Yeah.
It's like there's so much happening on social media, like yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And like even now in this conversation, you're probably starting to think, oh, what, on your Facebook? Like, have I checked my Twitter? You know, it becomes hard to focus and remember that you've got to actually get the job done. How do you get a society who's, you know, grown up with that attention span shortage and get them to focus on work when they have those problems?
Well, geez, I mean, you're really throwing some really difficult questions here. Because that's the thing, you know, it's only been 10 years that the iPhone's been in existence.
Yeah.
Only a decade. Yeah. Yet you think, what was life like without that? Yeah. You know, and even 5 years that social media is the monster that it's been. And you're right, attention spans are shrinking. More and more people are suffering anxiety. I mean, my audiences, 15 years ago, my first event, no one in my audience knew what the word anxiety meant.
Hmm.
Yet now it's as common as catching the cold.
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Like, I never used to get anxious. I pretty much roll with the breeze. You know, I had it wasn't really a 9-to-5 job, but I had a radio show that I was committed to doing every day. And the rest of the time I was just, you know, back in the 90s, just doing my own thing every day. You know, you go to the beach, you do your shopping. You wouldn't have to worry about checking your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, or whatever else is out there.
Yeah.
But now it's like, is it a FOMO thing? You feel like you're missing out because you're not checking everything, or because the news feed's going and all your friends are there and they're all posting stuff. I might have missed something. Is that where a lot of the anxiety is coming from?
I think the reason we're suffering anxiety is we're not present as much as we used to be.
Mm.
When you're present, you sit in your own thoughts, and when you sit in your own thoughts, you ask questions. And that's how we kind of manage our issues and problems. Mm. Whereas now we are constantly around things that stimulate and distract us from being present.
Yeah.
And when we sit in our own thoughts, that's when we deal with things. We're anxious because we're thinking about yesterday, worrying about tomorrow, and we're constantly looking externally from us for validation.
Mm.
You know, I think the fear of rejection is the greatest fear that a human being can experience. Mm. So what do we want as a opposite to that? We want love, we want recognition, we want gratitude.
Mm.
And the people who designed Facebook that are out of it now are saying, and there's a lot of videos on it, it's really interesting. They talk about validation loops and how that Facebook and a lot of social media platforms, they make their money through advertising. Therefore, they need you on there as much as possible. So they're totally designed to get you to be addicted to going on there.
The way people are
and
people like to be appreciated, and then they like validation. So if they post something that they believe in, then they'll keep showing you stuff that you believe in. So you start heading more into that group. But then there's the other side of the coin. If people don't believe in that, believe in this, and it starts shoving them that way, is it creating a massive divide in society? Because I believe that's what a lot of these guys who used to work at Facebook are saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, it's super scary, in my opinion. And because I'm at the coalface with young people, I see the main users of this and the change. I mean, so many more young people are cutting themselves.
Yeah.
Like, what is so many. I mean, I've never even thought about doing that.
Is it an anxiety thing? It's like, oh, I'm freaking out because I'm having anxiety because I can't think of everything at the same time. I can't do everything at the same time.
Yeah, I think...
that's just a way of dealing with it.
Yeah,
reminding yourself that you're really there and this is real. And maybe that's a way to put yourself back in your own body so you can start feeling things rather than thinking them too
much. Well, I think that's the initial motivation of cutting yourself. It's like a physical pain to take away from the internal pain that you're feeling. And I mean, there's a whole lot of reasons for it, but I truly believe, and you asked the question earlier, you know, what needs to change? Mm. And I know this sounds kind of like people say, oh, education, more awareness, you know, through our bullying things, but it's true. I didn't think, you know, in my audience, I always ask, hands up those of you who've been watching a TV show or a movie and as soon as it's boring, you pick up your phone and everyone puts their hand up. Yeah. And I immediately say, do you see there's a problem there?
Yeah.
And I know this as a filmmaker. I remember years ago, I was watching a movie and as soon as it got boring, I picked up my phone and it was a light bulb moment. I thought, I'm a filmmaker. Mm. This is my passion and I'm not even giving it the respect it deserves. Mm. And then that was a moment of clarity for me. I thought, okay, I need to put some rules around the phone because I'm already addicted to it. One in two teenagers has a screen addiction. They're calling it addiction now because
screen addiction.
Because when you look at the phone, you get a notification. It releases dopamine in our brain.
Yeah.
It's like the pleasurable experience we link to it. So, you know, I think just being aware that so many people are addicted to their phone. And, you know, my tips are don't be on the phone the first half an hour you wake up. And I know that's hard to do because
I know
it's like
I
that
sleep
excitement.
Right next to my bed. I'm straight up in the morning. Like, what's
happened
today? Oh, that's in my calendar. Oh, look, such and such messaged me. And what was I doing? Oh, that's right. I was going to have breakfast. And already your brain's going a million miles an hour.
Yeah.
I think rather than cutting yourself and putting yourself in the moment, something a lot of people are turning to is meditation because
yes.
you're focusing on your thoughts and realizing when you're thinking things completely fucking stupid, like I'm not good enough or I can't do this or, you know, she or he hates me because, and if you start looking at your thoughts and you realize, hang on a minute, this is just this monkey brain weird shit going on because even when I go to sleep at night, if I'm thinking stuff, I know that I've been thinking stuff the whole time I've been asleep. I wake up and my bed's got sheets and pillows everywhere. It looks like a freaking war zone. So if I wake up first thing in the morning and I go, right, just for 5 minutes, I'm just going to focus on nothing. I'm going to look at my thoughts and even just have nothing going on in your brain for 5 minutes makes so much difference.
Yeah. And it's just simple habits. Mm. You know, we've gotten here through a lot of simple bad habits.
Yeah.
You know, so to get it out is just creating new simple good habits. And I think it's reducing your notifications.
Yeah.
So that you're not, the phone is not dictating when you look on it.
All those fucking apps, you download an app and it's going, bing, you've got
Here's nothing.
Like, stop, that's going to give me anxiety.
Or a notification, you haven't been on the app a while, come back and see us. It's like, oh my gosh. And so for young people, it's a sense of overwhelm and it's a disconnect from whatever's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and it's again, you know, every human has six human needs. And there's a great movie called Titanic, which is a great illustration of two characters that get their human needs met in different ways. You've got Jack, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, and his sense of love and connection, significance, recognition, contribution are all met internally, meaning he doesn't need anyone else to be at peace in life. All he needs is the clothes on his back, a pencil, and a sheet of paper, and he's fine.
One more thing. He needed to get on the frickin' door... And float as well. Why couldn't he fit on the door as well at the end?
Well, it wouldn't have
That's
been
ridiculous.
As wouldn't have been as romantic of a movie, right? Because and I'm alive too.
Surely he would have lived as well.
Well, if every movie had common sense, would it be as enjoyable as it is, right? So
that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
But so I mean, he knew
he got it internally.
Have a lot of needs.
But then you've got Cal, the villain, played by Billy Zane, and he's got all of his needs met externally, meaning he's relying on other people and things. And the challenge for most people now is we don't get our needs met internally. We're looking for external validation. We're looking for external significance. And that's why the phone, and I mean, Steve Jobs said this in the 80s, before the computer was the beast that it was. He said, I want a computer to be an extension of a person. And isn't that what it is now?
It is, absolutely. And the way that things are going, it's actually going to be a part of the person. I mean, they're talking about, you know, enhancing your body and, you know, putting it in contact lenses and, you know, implanting chips in our heads so we know what's going on. But that's just going to make people's anxiety worse because they can't escape it.
Yeah. And that's a scary thing. And you're right. The word escape was, I think, a key thing is, like you said, when you wake up, you on the phone, you're completely connected to everything going around, all the noise. And that's why it's so lovely. And you mentioned meditation. I'm a huge advocate for meditation.
So what's your daily ritual?
With just my daily ritual, well, don't touch the phone when I get up. Don't touch it when I go to bed. Have from 5 o'clock is family and kids time. I put the phone away. I have a tech-free day once a week or once every 2 weeks where technology for 24 hours, just stop it. I'd like to do more yoga. I won't lie. I love yoga, but I don't do enough of it.
Yeah, I'm saying. You know? Whenever I've done it for a long period of time, like a couple of weeks every second or third day, I feel so much better, but it's hard to get into the habit and keep doing it because life gets so busy.
That's right. And I think it's just, you know, we either have excuses or results. We can't have the both, but it's just about that stake in the sand. You know, we move out of one of two reasons, to avoid pain or to gain pleasure. And I think what it's about is just connecting either enough pain to something to move away from. And unfortunately, that's a better motivator for more people than connecting to the pleasure. But I think it's just really getting connected to why you're doing it. And this is something I tell myself all the time, and I teach it. So it's not easy. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
You wake
right?
up in the morning, you have no technology for half an hour.
Yeah.
You would meditate or anything like that, or do yoga if you could.
If I could, like, yes. That'd be the, yes. With two kids, I tell you what, it's I don't wake up when I finish sleeping anymore. I wake up when my kids finish sleeping, but that's part of life.
I don't have kids, not that I know of, but I don't know how you do it, man. Seriously, it must be so hard every day having a screaming person demanding stuff.
And well, you know what? My kids are a blessing. I tell you, they're very chilled out. They're like, we call them hippie babies because they're so zen and relaxed and calm. But they have their moments. And I think it's just a different phase in my life. In my 20s, I partied, I went out, I traveled. Yeah. It was all about me. And now it's about kids and, you know.
And you're being punished.
Yeah, well, it's come full circle.
Punishing yourself with alcohol early, and now you're punishing yourself with screaming children. I'll tell you what, if I ever have kids, I'm getting a damn au pair. I mean, you get one of these girls from young guys, even from European country. They only cost $200 a week, and they're happy that they can extend their visa, and you can sleep in.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
go to work.
Yeah, yeah.
They can dress your children for you, but a lot of people won't do that. It's like, oh no, but your children only grow up once, and you have to experience all that bullshit. If I can get any help and it makes my life easier, why wouldn't you do that?
Well, that's right. I mean, I run a lot of events in Singapore. And a lot of Singaporeans have full-time nannies that just live with them. And a lot of my students, their nanny is as close to them as their mum and dad. Yeah. And I guess it just leverages time. I mean, my whole aspiration when I started this journey of running events around personal development was to just leverage my time as an entrepreneur to focus on film, which was my passion. And I think time is our most valuable commodity. We can't stretch or grow it. So you've got to be so strategic about where you spend your time, and technology and children. Technology is a big sapper of time, isn't it? You know, wasted time anyway. So.
Yeah, but what's good is when technology does save you time.
Yeah.
And it can do things for you. And we're heading in the direction of AI being able to figure things out for you. And that's a whole another conversation. Mm. So you wrote your first book at 19.
Yes.
International bestseller called The World at Your Feet. What prompted you to do that at 19 is because you thought, I'm 19, I've got the world at my feet. I'm going to write a book about it.
Well, I guess there's the glamorous story of why, but I'll give you the real story of why, which I don't normally talk about.
Okay.
The glamorous story of why was, write a book, get the message out. The real story of why was I had started to run seminars for teenagers, and I was a teenager myself. And I had a very negative article written about me from The Telegraph. So they said, I want to do a story on you. It's amazing. You're a teenager. You're running these seminars on emotional intelligence and goal setting and career guidance and communication skills for teenagers. We want to talk about it. It's like, great. So I had a 2-hour interview with them. They did a photo shoot. It was so exciting. I was first time I'd done anything in the media. Mm. And at the end of this last 2 minutes, they said, what do you charge for an event? I said, well, you know, for a one-day event, it's about $160, which is cheap as chips, really. And a two-day event, about $400 or $500. Mm. They're like, okay. Now, they didn't mention as well, I'd spent 18 months out of my friend's garage on no money developing all of this.
Yeah.
But the article came out. Beautiful photo of me. I was like, great. And the headline said, Brent Williams, changing the lives of young people, or is he taking advantage of parents who'll pay anything for their child's success? And the whole article was about me charging money for the event. And so that was a real, like, I couldn't believe it. I was so... And I didn't have the emotional muscle that I have now. I was devastated. I thought everyone was going to hate me because, you know, you just think one thing in the media, oh, everyone reads it, which they don't. But
that's the media. I mean, they'll always go for the negative because, you know, people sitting on their couch at home, they want to see the negative and they want to see the positive.
It's a more interesting story. Yeah.
It's like...
Makes them feel better about their lives too, right?
Yeah, like 60 Minutes in a Current Affair. Like you see all these stories and it's all about this person did that, this person did that.
Yeah.
How horrible are they? But what I love seeing of late is people are so much more media savvy and awake up to the beat ups that are happening in the news, and they're behind the scenes filming what actually went on. And there was a recent story on 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
about cryptocurrency.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they shot everything that 60 Minutes yeah. were doing behind the scenes.
Yeah. Very different story.
And it was a completely yeah. different story.
I watched
story.
It. I watched the what they filmed as well. Yeah.
But so many like other journalists are now, you know, being a lot more careful about what they say in an interview, and making sure that, you know, if they're being filmed, then they gotta stick to the facts.
And isn't that great? Because that's the whole issue. The way it can be skewed and stories can be. I remember Robert Kiyosaki, and I'll come back to why I wrote the book, but Robert Kiyosaki wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad. I remember a story about him in the 70s where it was supposed to be a very positive story. It was a current affair or 60 Minutes, and he said, okay, finished the interview and walked away, and he walked away and they kept running. And then it was about Robert Kiyosaki being a scam artist and looking walking away from our interview, and they just used the and then
bullshit.
So that was like he didn't come to Australia for 20 years as a result of that.
It's pure desperation though, yeah. because they're making way less money than they made say 10, 15 years ago, and they're becoming so insignificant and obsolete because they're driven by the dollar and their advertisers, and if an advertiser doesn't agree with what they're saying in a story, then they're not going to spend money with them anymore. And the other side of the coin is they've actually got to get readers, and by getting the readers, sometimes they're going to be sensationalizing and say things that are always the negative, because as humans, our brains tend to always focus towards the negative. I mean, because it's a life-saving thing from the prehistoric era. But that's why they're desperate to sell TV shows and say sensational things. But anyway, we want to talk about we can bag the media because we're starting a new media here. But the reason why you wrote the book,
so I wrote
Makers
the book.
Wrote a shit story about you in the paper, and so, you thought, right, I'm going to write a book about this.
Well, I wrote the book because I thought, okay, the media can attack me for running seminars, but if I write a book, how much can they attack me? And a book kind of positions me as an authority because people have said, you've written a book. Wow, you must know what you're talking about, right?
Even if they haven't read the book.
He's an author. So I literally wrote the book as a mechanism to get back in the media in a roundabout way. And sure enough, I did. I was on Sunrise and the Today Show and Carrie Ann and did heaps of media. And it was about the book. And then through the book, I got to talk about the seminar. So it was a strategic decision to do it because it made me an authority, because as a teenager, I lacked that credibility. But the book gave me that credibility. So the book was written mainly as a strategic decision to navigate the negative side of the media as much as I could. And so the book was essentially at its core, a lot of the principles that I talk about at my events.
Having your world at your feet.
Yeah,
And, you know, and so what do you mainly talk about at your events?
So my events, Empower You is the main event that I run, and I've had just under 25,000 teenagers, young adults in 6 countries go through that. It goes over 2.5 days, 28 hours. Yeah, so it's not a little, let's get up and talk about, I climbed this, I walked the Kokoda Trail one leg and isn't that great? It's not an inspirational story. It's very concrete strategy. So we talk about goal setting. We talk about emotional intelligence. We talk about belief systems and how to change negative beliefs you have that don't serve you. And that's probably a big thing. We do a whole section around communication skills. So how to build rapport, ask quality questions, open and close questions, matching and mirroring people. We do a section around career guidance and family relationships and a great section now on money and finance. You know, just giving young people an education around simple things like compound interest, managed funds, silver and gold as an alternative investment strategy to store your wealth, as opposed to money, which is just, you know, inflated based on what's happening in the economy. Property, understanding about property and not negative versus positive gear, and the whole motivation around that, which I mentioned earlier, is just to leverage your time. But the core of my events, because I got this question the other day, it said, what is some success stories? I was on Sky News doing an interview and they want to hear about, oh, you've got millionaires. And I've had many millionaires that have done the course now. I've had people that are like vice president of JP Morgan. But I said at the core of it, it's about making people just happy in their lives.
Yeah.
I think happiness seems to be a harder thing that people are attaining now. And happiness should be an easy thing.
Why don't they teach that at schools? They give you a religion class for half an hour every day, and that's probably their version of happiness. I mean, that's something that kids should be taught in school, to, you know, look at their thoughts and realize when they're thinking something that's utterly ridiculous. Yeah. And maybe meditation or something like that is something that should be taught in schools.
100%. You know, I've been beating down the doors of schools for almost 20 years now. And there have been some schools have embraced it, but most don't. And there's a whole lot of reasons why they don't. And I hate the excuse, oh, we just don't have time in our calendar. Like you said, half an hour a week on religious studies, you can squeeze me in.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me a half a day a year. You've got the time
so
for
you've
that.
Already had a couple of schools
Lots of schools I've spoken at.
I guess it's probably the best way to look at it and get a tap in more schools is by by showing the advantages and the people's lives that it's changed already.
Mm-hmm.
What are some good stories there of people whose lives you've changed with this great idea?
God, there are thousands. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's, you know, we've got hundreds of videos just on our website about success stories. I mean, I've had people that a lot of, just recently I've had, for some reason, we've had a lot of girls that have come through my programs that are suffering eating disorders. And have been in hospitals for years and on suicide watch, and now they're at full health and they're, you know, glowing testimonials of the work that we do.
Why do they have eating disorders? Is it because they think that they're fat?
It's not as simple as that. You know, there's a lot, it's a very complicated. A lot of them talk about, a big reason was Instagram and this false sense of what beauty is, right? Yeah. And what they should be. And that's the whole challenge with being online now is it gives so many people a warped sense of what happiness should look like, a healthy person should look like. And interestingly, and a lot of these girls talked about it, that there's a lot of Instagram private pages that are about glorifying eating disorders and saying how cool. Yeah, really? I didn't know. I'm so naive to this stuff. I'm like, what? But yeah, and then people that like send messages going, that was a really hot photo, seeing your like your rib cage and that looked great. And it's really like, it's a whole world I don't understand. Mm. And I don't even know, I wasn't even aware of it. Mm. But you know, I think there are young people that come along to me that are school captains and high achievers. And what it's about is just taking them to the next level. You know, I was school captain in year 12. I played elite sports. This education, and this is an interest, probably why I even started it. I was 18. I just finished my HSC, 99. And I was planning to go to university at the time, just because everyone else was, and it was the thing to do. I wanted to do movies. I wanted to be a filmmaker, but I didn't know how to get there. I thought, I'll go to university. I was outside a nightclub. Sorry, I was at a nightclub with some friends. A friend won $2,000 on the poker machines. He's flashing around, look at this. And I think, great, shout us a drink. Then I noticed the attention that it attracted. You know, he's flashing this money. You know, you rob a 7-Eleven, you're not going to make $2,000. You know, this is big score. So I said, let's leave. And so he said, how about get my car from the street and drive around the front? Mm. And I volunteered because most people's first car, not about your car, my first car was a 1984 Mitsubishi car. It was a terrible car. But his car was a red BMW M3 convertible. Whoa. He'd finished school in year 10, became a mechanic. All his money went, it was a beautiful car. So I get to drive it. Yeah. So I race out the street. I'm going through the keys and none of them working. And I notice in the corner of my eye from across the street, a couple guys walk over to me. You get a sense of what happens. I turn around. I said, give us your money. I said, I got none. I literally had like 50 cents. So give us your key card. I said, what, are you going to go to the bank? I said, no, we'll go to the ATM in the club. So then I think, oh, I've got to say no at some point. So I said, I'm not going to give it to you. And then they pulled a gun out.
What?
Yeah, so I gave the key card. He raced off. I wasn't worried about the money because that's $20 in my account. Good luck with that. But the guy with the gun dragged me across the street into the bushes, put the gun to my head. And I was kneeling down looking at this guy and first, I was trying to convince him, hey, mate, you want my shirt and one of my shoes? I thought, make a joke of it, maybe you'll laugh. And he was just like, F this, F that. And I was like, and then there was this moment I thought, he's going to shoot me here. Like, especially when his mate comes back, no money. You don't know, right?
Where was this?
I was in Flemington.
What?
Yeah. And so I was, it was a life-changing experience they talk about.
Yeah.
And my life flashed before my eyes, like first day of kindergarten, meeting Healthy Harold. Playing handball on the courts, going on holidays, my first kiss, you know, all this stuff. But then it got to the present, the moment, and it was the worst feeling. I remember just this sickening feeling of like, if I go now, like,
what have I done?
What have I done? And you could say, yes, you're 18, but I knew in my heart of hearts I'd given up on my dreams, goals, and ambitions. I'd started to procrastinate. And I kind of let go of the filmmaking dream. And I wanted that ever since I was probably 7 or 8. I did an acting class and said, this is for me, but I want to make the films. I don't want to star in them. And so it was an epiphany. And that was the catalyst for change for everything in my life. After that, the next day, the sky was blue, the grass was green, the air was fresher. And I thought, right, I got a second chance at life. I'm going to go after it. And then I knew that money would be an obstacle in my pursuit of filmmaking. So I went along to a wealth creation seminar. And the guy was saying, I'll teach you how to turn a dollar into a million in 7 years. I thought, I got a dollar. I'm ready. Let's go. Yeah. And, you know, he talked about like shares and property and things like that. And he ran a 3-day event in the Hunter Valley. And the first 2 days was the psychology of money. I didn't know what that meant, but it sounded good.
Yeah.
Essentially, it was just a flashy name for personal development, which is kind of like the Tony Robbins, the Zig Ziglars, the Bob Proctors of the world. But I got to tell you, man, it just supercharged me. I finished this event. I felt 10 feet tall. I could walk through walls. And I never lacked confidence. Never. But this just supercharged me. And people came up to me at that event with tears in their eyes saying, I wish I had this at your age. What different decisions may have made in my life had I been exposed to this?
Yeah.
And so I joined that company full time to really be engrossed in the environment. It's kind of like, have you seen the movie Boiler Room? Mm. It felt like that. And it was just like all these young people hustling, making all this money and doing these events.
So this is the company that does the events. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I wanted to see if they practice what they preach. Yeah, it was like $5,000 for the 3-day event. Yeah.
And then you went, hey, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah, well, because I was so young, I didn't know what I was talking about. I thought if I'm there every day, I'm going to learn a lot better.
Yeah, yeah.
And the same thing, all these people doing the course were saying, oh, I wish I had this at your age. And that was when I said, why don't I do this? Mm. Why don't I was kind of at the time going, do I go into film now or do I hold off? And I said, I'll give myself a 7-year window and at 25, I'll start the film business. And I've got 7 years to really hustle, roll up my sleeves and run these events and buy properties. And, you know, and I was very naive. And you have to be, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you think of all the reasons why it's not going to work, you probably won't do it. So that's when I started to work on the events and ran my first seminar at a drop-in center out of DY for two kids because the rest ran away. They didn't want to listen. Yeah. Those two were like locked in.
You had to start small.
Yeah, yeah. Me and these two kids, and it worked. It was great. Those two kids told their friends, and the next week we had 12, then we had 25, then we had 40, and then, you know, the rest is history. And so I'm super passionate about it, especially now because young people seem to be more disenchanted. They seem to lack that focus or direction or, like I said, just aren't as happy.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think wanting to be a filmmaker, and it's one of the toughest industries in the world to make in, because so many people out there want to be filmmakers, actors, the entertainment industry, to follow your dreams, because you're not making any money being a filmmaker when you start, you needed to build another business on the side to be able to make money so that cash cow was coming in so you could get better and better at making films so you could put food on the table.
Yes.
What would you say to people out there who have a dream like that and want to start building a business but don't have the financial backing to do it?
Yeah, so there's a couple things that I would say. The first thing is, if you've got an idea for a business, get a job in the field of the business you want to, so you're getting paid to learn. Mm. You know, if you want to own a restaurant, go work in a restaurant. Mm. So you're getting paid to learn and you're not making the mistakes with your own money. Mm. And the second thing is, like you said earlier, the internet has created a whole new market where you can make money. Like, I'm working with some students of mine right now that are literally looking to just be a marketing funnel for products online. Mm. Like selling, rather than, you know, going to a certain website for a GoPro, set up a landing page and some Instagram advertising at 5 cents a click, 10 cents a click, and take a commission on sales where you don't even need to hold the stock.
Right. Wow.
I mean, there's a huge market just to be a middleman now. And I'm talking about 15-year-olds, right? That are setting up these business, cost them $300 a month, that's cashing a grand. So there's no excuse now.
I love seeing when young kids just figure out a way to make cash. Like my little nephew, when he was about, I think he was 14 or 15, it was something like a couple of years ago, he wanted this brand new computer. So he borrowed the money of his mum and used the computer to mine for cryptocurrency, mined $900, paid back mum, and just now uses it for video games. And I'm like, dude, we can start a business.
Keep going.
I'm going to buy all these computers. And like, no, I just want to play Call of Duty.
I'm satisfied now. I've got my needs met.
Why do I want to sit there and run a business? What's that going to do for me? I don't need to buy another computer. It's great how kids are doing that. There's so many incredible success stories out there. Like one of our previous interviews, it's actually the first interview that I did on the mic. The High Smile guys, Nick and Alex, like these two 23, 24-year-old kids on the Gold Coast, they started a teeth whitening business and they turned over $50 million in the space of a year.
Wow.
Absolutely crazy. They were using people like Kylie Jenner, the Kardashians, and Ewan McGregor.
So they connect with these people directly?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, wow, that's amazing.
Colin McGregor. No, what's his name? The boxer, the UFC fighter.
Oh, Conor McGregor.
Conor McGregor,
I'm a big UFC fan. Never fought a day in my life, but I love the UFC.
They've got, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of followers, actually, when it comes to the Kardashians and McGregor. And they're, all of a sudden, they're just flashing this teeth-whitening stuff, and it just goes ballistic. And these guys on the Gold Coast, they've got this amazing office. They've got something like 60 or 70 staff. But what amazed me is I thought, okay, well, they've probably got like 30 or 40, you know, Instagram people they're paying at any one time. Mm-hmm. They actually have 20,000 people that they are paying to promote their product at any one time.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Key influencers. It is crazy.
The influencer world.
Yes, yes. The fact that it's such a common term now, we say that, right? You know, influencers that just get on there and show some sort of coffee bean and get paid for it. Mm. It's quite a remarkable time. So I think coming back to your question, I think if anyone's starting a business, is get the experience and get paid to do it and have a strategy to leverage. You know, it's all about, like for me, being able to have a business that essentially while I haven't achieved all my financial goals that I had, I've leveraged my time.
Mm.
And so when I started making short films, as you know, short films are expensive because you don't make money from them. No. So no one's really going to invest in it unless there's a feature film attached to it. Yeah. And even still, it's a gamble. But I was able to make 6 short films in 18 months, all self-funded. I spent just under 100 grand and I paid for the right people because I'm all about following recipes. I knew nothing.
Mm.
All I knew about film was that I loved it and that I watched DVD extras. That's it. The making of. Okay, I'll take that note. That's a good pointer. And really just common sense a bit. Yeah. And just knowing how to have good communication skills with people. And so it's just about paying people top dollar to be around me and just watch them. How do they do this? Why does the cameraman use that terminology? And what's the gaffer doing here? What's this? What's this? And just learning by experience is the way that I did that. But I did that because I had a strategy to leverage my time to pursue my passion. Because I think a lot of people have a passion. You need to put food on the table, like you mentioned.
Mm.
So if you want to be that actor, and that's what you want to do, that's fine.
Yeah.
Go for it, but have a strategy to support the dream.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily saying have an exit as an alternate, but just have a strategy to finance, to leverage your time, because too many people just go for it, go for it, go for it, and burn out.
Mm.
I mean, how many people that start filmmaking school actually go and do it? Not many.
Yeah. And,
not many.
And there's so many that will go to filmmaking school and they get to the end of it and they think, oh, well, no one's giving me a job now because I studied my ass off.
Exactly.
Why are they going to give me a job? Like, I got one friend in particular, he all he's done from the minute he left school, even at school, was make short films. He went to university and studied filmmaking. He got like a fucking doctorate in filmmaking, but no one will hire him.
Mm.
And it's like, you can't even get a job as a runner. But once you actually get in there and then you got to claw your way up, and it goes back to what you're saying, get a job where you actually want to learn. And if you can get around people who, like, for radio is a perfect example as well, because like I wanted to work in radio as a kid, and the only way that I could learn was by actually being in there and being the office boy and working for free. So, and that's what a lot of people do as well. They just offer their services for nothing so that they can learn.
Because it's all about attitude. If someone offers their time for nothing, I've even offered to pay people. Mm. Like, literally, I'll give you $1,000 if I can work for you for 2 weeks. Because I know they're going to go, holy cow, like, who does that? Mm. And immediately you position yourself and your attitude shines. And offering yourself for free is something I always advocate, because too many people swap time for money. And if you show a mentality of investing in yourself, then it's going to speak volumes for people. And then for me, come back to film, that's all I did. I knew nothing about film except I read a book. And it's funny, the catalyst in your life. I was in Ibiza, of all places, and had a great time. And I remember on the way home, a friend of mine had bought me a book, and I hadn't read it for a year. I'm not a big reader. But I had this book with me. It's Peter Jackson's autobiography on how he made Lord of the Rings.
Mm.
And I read it from start to end. And what I got out of that book was two things. One, he made a movie called Bad Taste. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yeah, I remember the cover of the
DVD. Yeah. And I watched, so I'm reading this. I never watched it, but I read this book, and he's talking about how he made over 4 years with his friends and all of his money in this job working for a paper, and he was financing this thing. So I went and watched it, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
It is really. And then, but what inspired me was I thought, if this guy can make that and then make The Lord of the Rings, I can do it.
Yeah, exactly.
If he goes and does that and then does The Lord of the Rings, I can do it.
That's what I say to all, because I own a film festival up on the Gold Coast, the Sanctuary Cove International Film Festival, being open for about 4 years. Get your entries in now. And a lot of kids come to the film festival and, it's my dream to make a feature film. Well, just do it.
Yeah.
Just get out there and actually do it. Even if you've got no money.
Yeah.
Just shoot something and edit it and keep working at it until you finish your first film. That way you've got one run on the board. I remember I had some guys who was just finished at AFTERS filmmaking course. They'd won a couple of short film competitions. They had a screenplay that had won awards, but they couldn't get the funding to make this movie. So they approached me and said, we want to get someone with a bit of a profile and make a movie about their life, but put actors around them so it's not exactly what's happening in their life. So we shot a feature film called Shooting Goldman, which was like me traveling around doing voiceover sessions or hosting events and TV shows. But then all of a sudden I start losing it, and I've got guns that I'm hiding in the roof, and you start going, what the hell's happening? But spoiler alert, when I start killing people, I realize that it's actually a movie. I still have people go, was that movie real or was it fake? And I go, do you watch it? And they say, yeah. And you didn't watch the fucking end, did you?
Because
I kill people.
Yeah.
You think I would be here right now if it's real?
Yeah.
But the guys that were making that, like, we were trying to get funding. We had meetings with people, investors. At one point, one guy was going to give us 100 grand because we thought, well, we can make it for 100 grand easy.
Yeah.
And then he thought it was going to be a bottom of the harbor scheme because we weren't going to make money because it was, you know, his accountant told him it wasn't going to. It's so difficult to get money. to cut a long story short. So I said, let's just shoot it. We've got cameras. We've got editing gear. We can show up like as a two-man crew, an actor and a cameraman.
Yeah.
And just you can just follow me around and I can actually go into normal working situations and shoot this movie. And we did. We finished it and got played in LA and New York. And it's so exciting because even though it's a, I don't think it's the best film. I've got friends out there that think it, that love it. They think it's great.
And you've done it. It's in the can.
It's done.
There's even a lot of talk.
Even if it's crap.
People.
There's always a million other ways you can look back and go, I would have done that differently. But you know, you got to move to the next project.
Yeah, that's right. And it's just about putting out content. I remember the first camera I bought was a Panasonic HDV Pro. It was like 15 grand. A lot of money. You know, I'm spending on this thing. Now that's a paperweight. That's not even 10 years ago. I mean, like you said, the quality. The quality of things you can film now with audio, with editing software, you don't need the money. Mm. And so you can go out and do it. And even look at a movie like Saw. I mean, these two Melbourne film students that have got this script, they're peddling around, no one wants it. Yeah. So they go, you know what? Let's just shoot a scene. And that's all they did. They shot one scene and they did it high quality, four or 5 minutes you can nail, 20 grand, you're going to make it look good. Yeah. Set it out, bang, $1 million, there you go, make the movie. And look at it now. It's one of the greatest horror franchises of all time. And James Wan, I think his name is, the director, he's doing Fast and the Furious. Yeah. He's doing, you know, The Conjuring.
They made gazillions.
Forget about it, because like you said, he just went out and did it.
Spirit Brothers as well.
Another
good example. I mean, they've got a new movie coming out soon called Winchester.
I heard of that film.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah, I think they ended up doing one of the Saw films as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but But it's, I mean, look, it's just, that's the thing. You know, there's no excuses anymore. If you want it enough, like the pleasure and pain, you just got to go and
get out there.
Not wait and sit around. Absolutely.
And make your film. Like another filmmaker friend of mine, he was executive producer of Big Brother, Chris Blackburn. And like he worked on 60 Minutes and a lot of other, you know, reporting style news shows. And all he ever wanted to do was make a feature film. And I bought him a really old like 1960s camera as a gift 1 year to say thanks for a great season on Big Brother. And he always, and I said, you got to leave this always on your desk to remind you to make your film. And he said that was one of the best things that he ever had as a motivator because it was always staring him in the face.
Yeah.
And he ended up going out and shooting this film for sod all money. But it was a great movie. He did such a good job. And now, you know, he's looking to do the next one. So you just need to get your start, need to get out there and just have a crack.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've been writing, and this is a film I can talk about. Mm. I did a short film in 2008 called Turning Point, and it was based on, I don't know if you remember as a kid.
I've heard of that.
There's a show. There is another film 15 years ago called Turning Point, same title, but... Mm. I don't know if you remember the show Unsolved Mysteries as a kid. That scared the shit out of me. I'd be watching that, didn't it? And come on, like the X-Files intro. And there was a story I remember as a 10-year-old where a guy was hiking in the mountains in the US and he got shot in the head and killed. And the police investigating this for a long time. There was no motivation, nothing in his... And anyway, 7 years pass and they discover kind of like CSI through ballistics evidence that a bullet... So we shot from two hunters 3 kilometers away at a deer. They shot at a deer. It missed the deer. Then it flew and it ricocheted across the lake. You know, like you throw a rock and it skims. And it skimmed up, hit this guy in the head. So these hunters had no idea that they killed this guy, right? No idea. And I thought, and I had that story. It's just stuck with me. And I thought, imagine you did a movie about two guys, you and I. We're going out on a hunting trip, you know, just because. And we shoot someone. What would you do?
And you didn't know.
You didn't. Oh, no, you do know. But you accidentally do it. And then you like see the body because you think it's a mistaken identity. Yeah. And I started researching. You know, this happens at least once a week around the world. Like a father shoots his son, a brother shoots his sister. They mistake something flashing up and fire away. It's really very common. And so I did a short film on it in 2008. I was on the set. Everyone said, this feels like a feature film. And then we edited it. And they said, listen, and I'll send you the link to it for you to watch it. Cool. And so I started writing the script. And... it's been 10 years now, and 6 weeks ago, I finally signed the deal for a production company in the US. They're going to fund it. And tomorrow morning, I'm having the production call to get it going. We're looking at a $3 to $6 million budget. My whole point is this film now will be the catalyst for many other scripts that I've got to just get out there. Once that first one, doesn't matter, as long as you don't completely stuff it up and it's a decent job, people go, it's kind of like anyone who does a development, you've committed something to completion.
Yeah.
You know, you've pulled it off, bang, you got the ticket, away you go. And so many Aussie filmmakers that just get that first one, get these 2-3 picture deals because they then go, what's next? Yeah. What's your next scripts?
Yeah, and then they're booked out for years and
years. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how do you get motivated when you're at the starting level and you want to be a filmmaker or you want to have your own Instagram business and it's such a long road ahead and you're looking at the mountain in front of you and you're going, shit, how am I going to climb that? This is going to take forever. Like, is there a daily routine that you go through? Or what is the best advice to attacking that, those hopes and dreams and making them a reality?
Yeah. Well, I like to think of, you've got to imagine like Batman with the, you know, he's got the bat belt, and it's just what tools you use. So there's a whole lot of tools. So the first one is you've got to start setting some goals. And I know people hear this all the time. I think people think goal setting, like let's say it was an academic goal at school.
Yeah.
I've set a goal to get better marks at school. That's a waste of time. A goal is like a coach or a mentor. It's a detailed plan of achievement, and it holds you accountable. And I think that's why people don't set goals in the first place, is they feel guilty because they get lazy. So I think it's about having some daily, weekly, monthly goals, because the prize is so far away. If you want to be a filmmaker or whatever it is, it's, you know, it's a 10 or 15 year journey. It's like overwhelm, right? Like you said. So it's about creating those daily habits. It's all about the habits. I think then it's about also, I do a lot of talk about vision boards and dream books. And why do I say this? We have shitty weeks. We have times when someone tells you you're hopeless or things don't work out.
How do you handle those knockbacks?
Have dream books, have vision boards, because you're going to have them. You've got to develop a thick skin and a soft heart, and it's not going to be just by yourself. Like, I've got a vision board that I made of like all my favorite directors, places I want to travel to. And you know what? You have a shitty week, you look at that and you go, that's why I'm doing it. And you've got to reconnect the emotion of when you set it. Like a New Year's resolution, you feel pumped. December 31st, I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to get healthy and get in the gym. Gyms explode January 1st because everyone uses their membership. And then it winds. And it's about reconnecting to the emotion of when you made the decision. Because like, we're emotional creatures. We go up and down and we lose that motivation. I also think a big thing is having one or two champions in your life, right? If I was doing things by myself, it's so easy to quit. But let's say you and I went for a swim every morning and I wake up a cold morning this morning, right? I go, I don't want to go, but I know Mike's going to be waiting there at 7 o'clock, so I don't want to let him down. We do more for others than we do ourselves. So I think it's about having a team, like a mastermind group.
Good people around you.
Yeah, good
get
people around
the
you.
Get rid of the losers.
Yeah.
That, like Will Smith had a video online I saw the other day, and he said, if you have anyone that's to your left and your right that doesn't believe in you 110% and think that you can do it, get rid of those people out of your life.
The toxic people, I call them.
How do you get rid of those toxic people?
Yeah,
you just got to cut them, you know, just like block their number.
Love them from a distance. Yeah. Just, and this is another thing, also protect your goals. You know, I remember when I started off my seminars, I went on a soccer trip, a yearly soccer trip with my team. I got to the airport and they all made a shirt. They thought it was funny. I joined Brent's cult army. So they're kind of like knocking, you know, you're a cult because and I took offense to that. I didn't say anything. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to shut my mouth and not talk to them about this anymore. So you've got to protect your dreams from people that are just going to shit on them, because there's a whole lot of people out there that just have an opinion for the sake of an opinion.
And it's just an opinion. Don't take it as gospel.
Yeah.
Then go and look at your vision board and your list of goals and everything that you're going to achieve and feel good about yourself again.
And
it's a great way to drag yourself out of depression as
that's
well.
That's right.
Like if you're constantly thinking of the negative, it's like a negative vision board that's dragging you into depression. Make your positive one. Write your list of amazing things that want to do with your life, all the great things that you have in your life, or even if you don't have so many great things, have a board of shit that you want, like you said, things that you desire and something to look to. But when you do have that and you're just too stuck in the negative, like how do you drag yourself out? Because some people feel like they couldn't even do a vision board and they think that's ridiculous. Like
at some point people got to take some personal responsibility for their life and say, okay, do I want a great life? I've got to take ownership. I can't rely on external factors. I've just got to make a firm decision of what I want. And this is where you've got to connect to either the pain or the pleasure to make a decision. And I think ultimately when we talk about technology, let's give it some credit now and say there's so many wonderful things now that will keep you motivated. Like when there are plenty of times when I have that devil on my shoulder to go, you know what, Brent, you don't even know what you're talking about. You've had 21 days on set total where you're directing. You don't know what you're doing because Steven Spielberg was directing every day from the age of 20. I'd say that. But I'm thinking, I'm coming up to a feature film I'm going to direct and I'm going to get on there going, I'm a fraud. But then on the other side, I go, you know what? You're all right. You're okay. And the way that I build that, which is the question you're asking, is tools. So I go on the internet. There's a thing called Masterclass you may have heard of. Right, it's like $300 a year, and they've got experts that they filmed.
Yeah,
like,
I did the Steve Martin.
Phenomenal.
Ones.
Yeah, they're on comedy.
To see what he thinks on comedy.
Yeah, I mean, there's so David Mamet. There's Martin Scorsese's coming out. These are like the people that
what
I want to listen
have you
to.
Done?
Martin Scorsese's coming out. I've done the Ron Howard one. I'm directing.
What was the Ron Howard?
David Mamet. Well, he talks about how to how you communicate with actors on set, building rapport, how you set up a scene, how you work with the DOP, like really the nuts and bolts. And I'm paying $300 a year for all of them.
So good.
You want to learn a cook, Gordon Ramsay?
For all of them.
It's $100 per one, but if you pay $300, you get all of them. It's a no-brainer for me.
Worth doing.
Because I get, there's writers, there's directors, there's producers coming up. But then you go on YouTube. I just Google directing tips and just have a video playing in the background while I'm doing work. Like, you just got to surround yourself with the right environment. Yeah. 95% of our thoughts today are regurgitated from yesterday. So if you're regurgitating negativity, like negative yesterday, you just, so it's about tuning into an environment that's going to feed you.
New ideas.
My seminar, 2.5 days, 28 hours. These teenagers come along, and let me be very clear about this. Yeah. Most of them don't want to be there.
Yeah.
Most of them, their parents have gone, you're going to do this. And I always say to the parents, good on you, because you're a parent first and a friend second. And too many parents are friends first and go, do you want to do this, Jimmy? I don't want to go listen to someone lecture me about life. Okay, don't worry about it. And they've totally robbed that child of an amazing experience. So they come in on a Friday night going, my mum's made me do this, my dad, I don't want to be this guy's a scammer or whatever. By Sunday night, they're literally crying tears of joy.
How do you turn them around? You're hypnotizing them?
Well, you should come along. Honestly, pop in for an hour or two. So how I do it is create positive peer pressure.
Yeah.
So firstly, and you know, doing this a long time, when I started this, it was a lot harder than it is now because I've learned, as you've learned, you get great at doing anything long enough. So I've learned how to build rapport, how to handle objections, how to almost look for, okay, I've got a room of 50 or 60. Who's the one who's going to be the troublemaker? I'm going to get them right now.
Yeah. So
and I call them out.
That's like if I'm ever doing a TV show or back when I was doing like crowd warm up, you'd look for the worst part of the audience. It's not clapping, not standing up. You go, that's the area that I have to work on.
Yeah.
And I've got to talk to them. And that way they're going to think, oh shit, the whole room's looking at me. And then they all of a sudden start paying attention.
Because the person with the mic is in control. The person up there is the, and
is
you're
the
authority.
Is that what peer pressure is? What you mean? Positive peer pressure?
Well, because once you get enough of the group, you get 60 of them, 30 want to be there. 20 are like, 10 are like, nah. So if I get that one worst person and build some rapport and say, you know, I'm all right, you're okay, and have a bit of a joke, and then immediately they start tuning in because I've given them that love. I've given them that
attention.
Showing
them some attention.
Yeah. You know, people get attention either by being a brat or being awesome. And I just want to validate and recognize people being awesome and give them a lot of love. So they want that. I give them the carrot. And these guys sometimes the stick. You know, you've got to create boundaries. You've got to be very, like, you know, I don't muck around at these events. Like if someone's giving me some shit, I'll call them out in front of everyone. And I'll do it with love.
Like a real smart ass.
Well, yeah, man, you've got to do it.
That was me in school. And then I ended up just getting kicked out.
Yeah.
Do you kick people out or have you ever had to?
Once you kick
someone out.
And you know what? I'm devastated to do that.
To me.
Yeah, well, I'm devastated when I got to kick them out because then I feel like I failed them, right?
Yeah.
So creating that environment. And when we're talking good stuff, we're talking about their future. We're talking about where they want to go. I mean, that's good stuff if they just tune into it. You know, where do you want to be? How are you going to get there? Let's really talk about it at a grassroots level. Let's look at what are the things that are really holding you back in life. And a lot of them come in there and they've got blinders onto it. They don't even see because they've never really asked those questions. They've never really reflected. It's kind of like the onion, right? They've never really peeled back the layers. They just looked at the outer surface and thinking it's okay. But then they start looking, you know what? Yeah, I kind of doubt myself a lot. Or you know what? I actually do talk negatively and I never thought about it. And it's because I've got 28 hours of them being present, no mobile phones, no nothing, even in breaks, no phones.
Self-reflection.
No excuse to tune out from being present. That self-reflection creates a really powerful environment for them to go, okay, what is it that I really want? I've been so tuned into school and studies and the noise of the world.
Yeah.
2 days of going, let's reflect on life. Let's look at these tools. That's an interesting thing about state of mind and strategy. That's good about comfort zones and taking responsibility. And that's an interesting thing you're talking about with regards to thoughts and results. And then they start to tune in. And then that's how we make those shifts is because you create an environment where people start to really love themselves and get excited about what's motivation. Motivation, very simply, is getting excited about potential. Potential of a future. We could sit here all day and talk about let's come up with a 10-year vision for ourselves about you know the businesses we have and where we're going to go and let's start future pacing it. We're going to get inspired because
so
we're invested
them.
Emotionally in it. Yeah, yeah, you get invested, you get emotionally enrolled in something. You get excited.
Why
and
are
that's
they crying
how you
by the
out.
End of it? Because they realize that you know they haven't focused on their dreams and goals before and they haven't realized that they could achieve so many great things. Why,
the crying.
Why get emotional
well, look,
at the end?
You know, I don't want to be dramatic about it, but people do. Like, well, there's two times when they cry at my event. So on the Saturday night, we do a very cathartic process called a board break. And so we get a piece of wood, like a karate board, and we write down all the things that are holding you back in life. And for some of these young people, they come in, they've got no idea, but we get them into an emotional state. I do like a visualization, get them close their eyes, and you know what are some of the doubts you've had? Have people hurt you? Have you hurt people, let people down? And they open their eyes and they write it down. And when they start writing, it's a very confronting thing because most people don't want to write down negative things about themselves, like I feel fat, I'm ugly, no one loves me, I'm unworthy, I felt rejection. And they write it down and they'll fill up the whole board. Then on the other side, we write down all the positive things. So it's like moving away from, moving towards. And then we, you know, go through the strategy and we get them kind of all into a really hyped up mental state and they break the board. And that is a moment of like, it's like a recognition that, you know what, there's some stuff going on, but this is where I want to go.
Mm. And what about all the negatives in the book? Do you make them rip them out and set fire to them, or is that something that they need there to reflect as like bad energy,
reminder,
or void?
Well, it's a reference like anything else. It's a reminder that this is the person I don't want to be and I've made a decision of change. Mm. The second reason they cry is I do it's about a 15-minute guided visualization where essentially I get them to close their eyes, play some music, and I future pace. Let's look at your life a year from now, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and see your partner, see your children being born. And now look, there's four learning modalities. We have visual people, we have auditory, we have kinesthetic, which is touch, and audio digital, which is thinkers.
Yeah.
60% of the population are visual learners. So not everyone visualizes very easily, but most of my audience do. Mm. And so when they can see it as if it's real, it's emotional. I remember, and I've never told this story actually publicly outside of my events, but I did one of these when I was 18 in my first seminar I was telling you about. I was standing in the room, 200 adults, and he said, see yourself a year from now, 2 years.
What was the seminar?
It was called Born Rich. It was based on a guy named Bob Proctor.
Oh, yeah.
You Were Born Rich. And it was just, they've rebranded it now, but
So you're standing there and you're...
Standing there and all of a sudden, no joke, through my mind's eyes, as clear as I'm looking at you now, I saw myself standing on a stage in front of thousands of people. I didn't know what it was at first, but for some reason I knew how old I was, 44. So I'm 36 now, so it's now in 8 years' time, 44. And there was standing ovation. Now look at the side and there's my hero, Steven Spielberg, standing there with a long beard like Gandalf and a walking stick. You know? And he hobbles over to me and he gives me an Academy Award for Best Director.
Wow.
And I stand there and I gave my speech. And I literally, as I'm standing there giving this speech about how this has been my life's dream and this is it, and you follow, I started to cry. As 18, I'm just crying.
Wow.
And I never cried because I'm happy before. I never understood tears, but it was such a beautiful thing. And so what we do at my events is create such an emotional experience that people see themselves further than they ever have before in a life that they always dreamed of, but can actually almost taste it and feel it. And like, it's there. Mm. And so that's about connecting to the pleasure and really forecasting 5, 10, 20 years ahead and going, that can happen. You just got to make a decision. Mm. You don't, all this, how do I do it? And I'm feeling it a rut. Just get up and do it. We spend so long thinking about doing something, don't we? And when we think about the decision, it becomes this big thing, right? We connect an emotion, a thought, emotional thought, and becomes so much bigger than it needs to be. When we actually just do it, we go, wasn't that hard. You know, life rewards
look
action.
What I achieved.
Yeah, life rewards action. Just get out and do it. And it's in the doing that you learn the lessons.
And is it also about celebrating the small wins?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Celebrating the small wins. And that's another thing. You know, it's about creating positive reinforcement for taking action. You know, when we think about a belief, right? I have a belief that I'm a confident public speaker, or I have a belief that I'm terrible at maths. We're not born with these beliefs. We're not born with them. We're not born in our mother's womb and go, wow, just, you know, don't like public speaking. You know, public speaking is the greatest fear of human beings. Number two is death. Number one is public speaking. Mm. So something along the line in our life has to have happened for us to create that belief.
Mm.
Think about this table and the legs. Mm. The table stands because there are legs underneath it. So the legs support the table to be true. A belief needs references. References are like evidence. So things that have happened that create the belief. The stronger your belief about something, the more references have validated that belief. Mm. So in order to change the belief, let's say it's a negative one, you've got to come up with new references. Mm. So if you're not a confident public speaker, get on the microphone and give it a go.
Mm.
And when the crowd gives you a round of applause for giving an answer, guess what you've done? You've created that one leg. And you've got to keep doing it. And that's how we change our beliefs, is by taking action outside of our comfort zone. And that's how we do it. There's no other way. There's no reading books or thinking about it. You just got to get out there and do something. And the only way to do something is connect enough to the pleasure or be sick enough of the pain in your life that you go, I've had enough. You either hit rock bottom and go, it's time to do something. I've had enough, you know, or you really connect to the pleasure. And for me, it was about connecting to being a filmmaker and saying, if I don't tackle filmmaking in my life and I'm 80 years old, I'm going to be full of regret. And that's the saddest thing for anyone in their life when they finish and go, not the things they did, the things they didn't do, the risks they didn't take.
Yeah, I'd rather regret the things that I did than the things I didn't do.
That's right.
So if someone doesn't have any hopes, goals, dreams, like, you know, obviously it's a lot of kids that you do your weekend courses for. How do you help them figure out what they really want to do at that age? Because when I was 19, I had no fucking idea what I wanted
to do. Totally. That's a great question. Because I always ask the audience when I get to our careers section, it was nearly at the end of the weekend. I said, hands up, who knows what they want to do? And you get about 30%. Hands up, who's got some idea? Another 30%. Who's got no idea? And so I think for those who have no idea, it's about firstly saying, well, just get out there and do something. I remember a guy named Brad Sugars, didn't know what he wanted to do when he finished school. So he just worked in about 15 or 20 jobs in the space of 2 years. Just went ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And it was within that
process. Hey, Brad, if you're watching, he's a good mate of mine. I was at his 40th birthday party in Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so Brad, you know, quickly learnt about what made a business work and what it didn't. And then he set up Action International and, you know,
the Action Coach.
Yeah, one of the biggest business coaching companies on the planet. Yeah. And so it's in just doing something, you're going to work it out. The second thing I would say is everyone's got a hobby. Everyone's got a passion. And we know now with technology, you can make money doing all kinds of things. If you love video games, get a YouTube channel, start reviewing video games. Go play.
And you can make a lot of money out of that.
Yeah, you can make a lot. Isn't it crazy? Yeah. I mean, there are people coming through my seminars now that literally are training to be professional gamers. Mm. Like full-time, this is my living. You know, I follow the Premier League. I'm a big, you know, soccer fan, football, I should say. And each of the major clubs now in the world are paying players to represent their club $100,000 a year just to play FIFA in tournaments. Wow. So if you don't know what you want to do, it's okay. Mm. You don't have to. And this is the one thing I want to make very clear. You don't have to go, this is my purpose and my dream. Mm. I mean, we haven't talked about it. I've run a publicity company called Kapow Media. I've run a US property buyers agency called Splash Property Group, buying foreclosed homes, renovating them, selling them.
Wow.
I've had my production company, Indiana Pictures, Tomorrow's Youth. So you can, I call it multi-potentialite. You can do whatever you want to do, but you just got to start doing something. And it's through the something that you'll find either you hate it, then do the opposite of that, or you love it and continue on that path. But I think it's just about taking action and connecting to what do you love to do, and is there a career around that? Because there's so many things. You love animals? How many jobs are there in the world or careers around animals, whether it's at the zoo or at a vet or what have you? I mean, in the zoo, there's 243, because I researched this, as you do. 243 different occupations within the zoo. Not job positions, but different niches of a career. So I think work out what your hobbies are and pursue that. Or just, like I said with Brad, just get out and do something.
Yeah, like I was actually another interview that we had on the show, Dr. DiMartini.
I know, yeah. Yeah, John.
Institute.
Yeah.
He was talking the other night. I went to see his chat about, I think it's the 10 principles of success, or it was something along those lines. And he was talking about the same subject, where there were some people in the crowd that had no idea what they wanted to do with their life, no idea what direction they wanted to head. And one lady in the audience, she's standing up, she's trying to figure it out. She said she doesn't have any passion or goals or dreams. He goes, yeah, you do. What do you like doing? And she goes, well, I don't know. I like playing with my dog. And he said, well, there's a start.
Yeah.
Let's build a business around you playing with your dog. Anyway, fast forward a few years later, that lady's got like a $20 million business around looking after dogs and, you know, I think it's like dog toys and stuff like that. So you're so right, just about finding your passion and realizing, hang on a minute, I love this for a reason. I can turn this into a job.
Whatever it is, there's a job around it. You ask enough questions, the answers will come, and this is the problem. People don't ask questions anymore.
I'm constantly asking questions. That's why I have this show.
And here we are.
And we can ask questions for days and days longer, but you've got a hectic schedule running all those businesses, so we've got to let you fly. But thank you so much for coming on the mic.
My pleasure.
Where can people find you, firstly, to do your weekend course?
Yes.
And secondly, we want to have a look at some of your films. Where can you see them?
Yes, yes, yes. So for the seminars, we run them up and down the East Coast. So in Sydney, Byron Bay, Melbourne, Canberra, soon to be Newcastle and Brisbane. Our website's tomorrowsyouth.com.au. So the names empower you, but our business is tomorrowsyouth.com.au. On there, there's a plethora of videos and testimonials and all the information you need to make a decision. Age range is 13 to 25, if anyone's probably wondering what age group, 13 to 25. So that's the seminars. And we're on Instagram and Facebook and all that other Snapchat. I don't even know.
Tomorrow's Youth.
Yeah, Tomorrow's Youth. That's excellent. What you need to know. So films. My production company is called In Indianic Pictures. So indianicpictures.com.au. All the shorts are on there. We've got a blog updating what we're allowed to talk about publicly about the film stuff. Another film, you may have heard of a story named Jesse Martin. He was the youngest person to sail around the world solo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got the rights to his story.
Oh, fantastic.
So we've been developing a feature film for the last 2 years. I've got some big time producers on board, people that produced Moulin Rouge and Romeo and Juliet.
Wow.
So that for me, my film turning point will be the step to then go $30 million budget. Okay, Lionheart.
And the next one, and the next one, and the next one. That's great, man.
Hopefully.
Well done.
Stay in the race.
It's such a long process. It takes years. Yeah. And getting the bases loaded with, you know, the best director, the best producer, you know, the best actors.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, look what I've got here. How about some money? And and you can hit up, you know, Film Victoria, Film Australia, and eventually someone will give you the cash. But it takes forever. And good on you for sticking with it and making your dreams a reality and helping other people to make their dreams a reality.
Thank you. Thanks for having
Legend.
Me.
Legend. Thanks for being on the show.